The People of the Crater by Andre Norton. Part 1.
Send the Black Throne to dust, conquer the Black Ones, and bring the Daughter from the Caves of Darkness. These were the tasks Garin must perform to fulfill the prophecy of the Ancient Ones and establish his own destiny in this hidden land. Chapter 1. Through the Blue Haze. 6 months and 3 days after the Peace of Shanghai was signed and the Great War of 1965-1970 declared at an end by an exhausted world, a young man huddled on a park bench in New York, staring miserably at the gravel beneath his badly worn shoes. He had been trained to fill the pilot's seat in the control cabin of a fighting plane, and for nothing else. The search for a niche in civilian life had cost him both health and ambition. A newcomer dropped down on the other end of the bench. The flyer studied him bitterly. He had the decent shoes, a warm coat, and that air of satisfaction with the world which is the result of economic security. Although he was well into middle age, the man had a compact grace of movement and an air of alertness. "Aren't you Captain Garin Featherstone?" Startled, the flyer nodded dumbly. From a plump billfold, the man drew a clipping and waved it towards his seatmate. 2 years before, Captain Garin Featherstone of the United Democratic Forces had led a perilous bombing raid into the wilds of Siberia to wipe out the vast expeditionary army secretly gathering there. It had been a spectacular affair, and had brought the survivors some fleeting fame. "You're the sort of chap I've been looking for," the stranger folded the clipping again. "A flyer with courage, initiative, and brains. The man who led that raid is worth investing in." "What's the proposition?" asked Featherstone wearily. He no longer believed in luck. "I'm Gregory Farson," the other returned, as if it should answer the question.
"The Antarctic man?"
"Just so. As you have probably heard, I was halted on the eve of my last expedition by the sudden spread of war to this country. Now I am preparing to sail south again."
"But I don't see..."
"How you can help me? Very simple, Captain Featherstone. I need pilots. Unfortunately, the war has disposed of most of them. I'm lucky to contact one such as yourself." And it was as simple as that. But Garin didn't really believe that it was more than a dream until they touched the glacial shores of the polar continent some months later. As they brought ashore the three large planes, he began to wonder at the driving motive behind Farson's vague plans. When the supply ship sailed, not to return for a year, Farson called them together. Three of the company were pilots, all war veterans, and two were engineers who spent most of their waking hours engrossed in the maps Farson produced. "Tomorrow," the leader glanced from face to face, "we start inland, here." On a map spread before him, he indicated a line marked in purple. 10 years ago, I was a member of the Verdane expedition. Once, when flying due south, our plane was caught by some freakish air current and drawn off its course. When we were totally off our map, we saw in the distance a thick, bluish haze. It seemed to rise in a straight line from the ice plain to the sky. Unfortunately, our fuel was low, and we dared not risk a closer investigation. So we fought our way back to the base. Verdane, however, had little interest in our report, and we did not investigate it. 3 years ago, that Kadok expedition, hunting oil deposits by the order of the dictator, reported seeing the same haze. This time, we are going to explore it." "Why?" Garin asked curiously. "Are you so eager to penetrate this haze? I gather that's what we're here to do." Farson hesitated before answering. "It has often been suggested that beneath the ice sheeting of this continent may be hidden mineral wealth. I believe that the haze is caused by some form of volcanic activity and perhaps a break in the crust." Garin frowned at the map. He wasn't so sure about that explanation, but Farson was paying the bills. The flyer shrugged away his uneasiness. Much could be forgiven a man who allowed one to eat regularly again. 4 days later, they set out. Helmley, one of the engineers, Rawlson, a pilot, and Farson occupied the first plane. The other engineer and pilot were in the second, and Garin, with the extra supplies, was alone in the third. He was content to be alone as they took off across the blue-white waste. His ship, because of its load, was loggy, so he did not attempt to follow the other two in the higher lane. They were